Hi, I'm Francesca, a registered nutritional therapist, and welcome to the Empowered Perimenopause podcast. This is a space for down-to-earth, honest conversations about what's really going on in your body in your 40s and how to support yourself through it. If you're feeling a bit out of sync, overwhelmed, or just not quite like yourself, you're in the right place. So let's get into today's episode. Hi, and welcome back to another episode with me, your host, Francesca. So over the last few episodes, we've been talking about what I've been referring to as the whole body shift. So we've talked about why perimenopause isn't just about hormones. We've explored the nervous system, sleep, weight gain, and blood sugar and insulin sensitivity. And one of the things I hope you've started to notice is that none of these systems work on their own in isolation. They're all connected. So our hormones influence our sleep and vice versa. Our sleep influences our blood sugar and vice versa. Our blood sugar influences our energy. Our energy influences how we move and vice versa. And our movement influences our muscles. And our muscles, as we're going to talk about today, influenced almost everything else. And I've brought that in. I've weaved muscle health into the last few episodes, particularly when we were talking about blood sugar and insulin sensitivity and how helpful muscle is to help us to manage our blood sugar better and maintain insulin sensitivity, which really is so foundational for health. So in today's episode, I want to talk more about muscle, but from the point of view of how we can build a stronger body during perimenopause and of course beyond as well. And I wonder, first of all, though, what comes to your mind when you hear the words build muscle? Because I think some of us can picture someone who spends hours in the gym, maybe someone who's bulky, or you know, they're lifting enormous weights and they're going to the gym five times a week, drinking nothing but protein shakes. Or maybe you think building muscle just isn't me. And I totally understand if that is you, if that resonates, because I think muscle's had quite poor marketing over the years, especially for women. We've somehow come to associate it with appearance, with bodybuilding, with just looking bulky, even with trying to look a certain way. But I'd love to start to reframe that today, because those things just really, you know, building muscle isn't really about looking different. Although, of course, it can support a goal to improve body composition. Of course it can. And it usually does. That's a natural side effect of starting to engage in strength training, you know, building muscle essentially, is that we do tend to start to like what we see. But it really is about having the strength and the energy to carry our shopping to or other heavy things, you know, without your back or your shoulders aching or needing to ask for help, to be able to get up from the floor easily, ideally without using your hands because you have enough strength in your legs to get you up. It's about being able to walk up hills or ramps or going upstairs without feeling exhausted and feeling like you have to take the lift or the escalator. It's about being able to play with your children or your grandchildren, whether that's now or later, traveling with ease, gardening, feeling physically capable. You know, it is really about remaining independent as you grow older. That's something huge, particularly I definitely feel for me, it's something huge. Building muscle isn't about becoming someone else's version of fit and doing things in the gym that spending time in the gym that you might not want to. It's about becoming stronger for your own life. And the more we've learned about muscle over the last 20 years, the more we've started to realize that it does so much more than just simply help us to move or be strong. Those things are very important. But muscle isn't just something attached to our bones that holds us up and gives us strength. It's a living, active tissue that communicates with almost every other body system. It influences our metabolism. As we talked about last week, it influences our blood sugar, insulin sensitivity, so insulin health. It influences our bones, our brain, our immune system, our other hormones, even our longevity, so how healthy we'll age. So you'll actually also possibly you've already heard people like scientists and people who are digging deeper into the muscle research describe it as the organ of longevity. And I think that's a really great description of our muscle, because it can then, if we understand how important it is as a kind of separate, its own organ, and an organ that can help us age healthily, then it helps to shift our focus away from simply just the aesthetics of it and move our focus more towards health. towards resilience, towards building a body that supports us, you know, not just for now, but for decades to come. And I think that's especially important during perimenopause, because as we move through this stage of life, it isn't just asking us to manage. It's not about just managing symptoms. Obviously, we get thrown a whole new sort of hormonal landscape now as we move into our 40s and through it. And we get sets of symptoms that we might not have had before, experienced before, or things get worse, or things evolve and change. And we go through and thinking, what is going on? And, you know, can kind of feel for some of us that we're fighting fires when it comes to symptoms. But it isn't just that. It's also, perimenopause is inviting us to invest in our future health, the future health of our body. So before we go any further, I do firstly want to reassure you of something, though. This episode isn't about telling you that you need to be spending 5 days a week in the gym, you know, lifting the heaviest possible weights, or that if you're not doing that, you're doing things wrong. Because I know that social media can sometimes make it feel as though that's the only way, that's what we should be doing. And you'll hear people saying every woman over 40 should be lifting incredibly heavy weights 4 or 5 times a week. And whilst strength training is undoubtedly one of the best things we can do for our health, there isn't one single right way to approach it. Some women absolutely love going to the gym. I do. Others prefer working out at home. I'm working out at home at the moment because I have to, which I'll explain in a bit. Some enjoy kettlebells. Some enjoy kettlebell classes. Some enjoy kettlebells at home. Some enjoy using resistance bands or bodyweight exercises or short strength sessions that fit around their family and their work that they can do from home or in the gym if they can. But what matters is that you're consistently giving your muscles a reason to stick around, basically, because from around the age of 30, which I've spoken about before, we all naturally begin to lose muscle mass. It's something called sarcopenia, which I mentioned, I think I've talked about in the previous episode. Men and women as well. It's a normal part of aging from around age 30. But during perimenopause, that muscle loss process can accelerate as estrogen and progesterone begin to decline because they're such good hormones for keeping our muscle mass around. Now, that might sound a little depressing. You know, here's another thing that happened, you know, that we lose as we lose these hormones. But I actually find it quite hopeful because once we know these things, for example, unlike a lot of aspects of aging, muscle is actually really responsive to positive input, for example, working them. So once we know that we need to do things, we do need to be working our muscles so that we can help to keep that muscle staying around to maintain what we have and also slow down that sarcopenia, that natural process. But also we can build new muscle, which is definitely something we don't lose the ability to do ever. And that our muscle is actually really responsive to that positive input. So working them, I find that really optimistic and really hopeful. We don't just have to lie down and take this at all. And our bodies continue adapting throughout our lives. They're constantly responding to the signals we give them. And when we challenge our muscles appropriately and we feed them well and we allow them time to recover, because recovery between sessions is also very important, which is why I'm not telling people to be in the gym 5 times a week. But when we do all of these things, our muscles respond really well, even in our 40s, even in our 50s, even in our 60s, even in our 70s and beyond. To me, that's one of the most encouraging things. And it reminds us that it's never really too late to be, it's never too late to become stronger. It's never too early to start. It's definitely never too late. So today I'd really like to explain why muscle matters so much during perimenopause specifically, and definitely beyond. Not from the perspective of changing how we look, although, as I said, that can and likely will be the natural side effect. We'll be very happy with what it's doing to our body physically, but from the perspective of changing how you feel and how we experience this phase of life. Because if there's one message I hope that you'll all take away from today's episode, it's that muscle doesn't just make you stronger, but it actually makes, or leaner, let's say, but it actually makes your whole body more resilient. And I think, again, that's really powerful. So building muscle stops, it can kind of stop feeling like this other thing we should be doing, like we should be in the gym. I'm doing everything. I'm kind of ticking off a few boxes, but I'm not in the gym. It can start to make it feel like something that would be one of the greatest sort of acts of self-love that we can give ourselves, both now and our future selves. So less of a something we just need to be doing, more of something that we actually want to start doing. That's what I'm really hoping that you feel at the end of this episode. So let's start by looking at why muscle supports so much more than just strength, lean, you know, how you look. Starting with one of the biggest misconceptions about muscle. So a lot of people think of muscle simply as the part of our body that helps us move. Its structure, you know, it's stuck to our bones, and it structures our body. It helps us stand up. It helps us walk, climb stairs, carry shopping, lift heavy things, as I said. And of course, all of these things are true and really important. But over the last couple of decades, scientists have discovered some fascinating stuff about our muscles that I think is really important that we understand. So again, like I say, you know, when you're in the gym, you just feel like you don't want to be there, or you feel like you don't want to go today to your second or third session of the week. It helps me anyway, when I feel that way, to say, no, this is something I need to do for myself. This is not just about me showing up to make sure I, you know, keep my body looking a certain way or my weight controlled or whatever. It's so much more than all of those things. Our muscles are actually communicating with the rest of our body. They're constantly sending and receiving messages. So basically, it doesn't just sit there. It's biologically active. It's influencing the health of a lot of other systems that we've been talking about throughout this series of episodes. So since episode 93, so 93, 94, all of everything up to now has been the whole body shift series. And muscle is influencing all of those systems that we've been talking about that are really foundational to our experience of perimenopause and beyond, and our just health and well-being generally. So once we understand that and appreciate it, we can start to see building muscle in a completely different light, like I say, as we can stop thinking of it as something that's only important for athletes or people who enjoy the gym, or only important for people with a weight loss goal, or, you know, it's actually, we can start to see it as one of the foundations of healthy aging, just like we would see eating healthily and having healthy lifestyle habits. You know, all of these things are foundations of healthy aging, having a healthy gut, having a liver that's working well, and clearing out your toxins, and, you know, processing used hormones, and all these things that are foundational for healthy aging. We want to start seeing building muscle as that as well. One of the things I find most incredible is that every time your muscles contract, whether you're lifting weights, climbing a hill, doing a bodyweight squat at home, or carrying your heavy shopping bags, they release tiny signaling molecules called myokines. So you don't need to worry too much about remembering that word. The important thing to know is what myokines do. So I like to think of myokines as little messengers. So as your muscles contract, so they're doing their work in whatever, like I said, whatever thing you're getting them to do, whether you are in the gym lifting a squat or whether you are carrying your shopping bag out of the supermarket, that contraction of the muscles sends out these messages to other parts of the myokines, sorry, as we contract our muscles, they send out little messages to other parts of the body, helping to regulate inflammation, support immune function, and influence the health of other organs in the body. And I think that's really amazing. Your muscles aren't just working for themselves to get stronger, to get bigger. They're communicating with your whole body. And this is one of the reasons movement can make us feel so much better, not just physically, but also mentally. Have you noticed that? I definitely do. I feel like it helps me feel better in my brain, just cognitively, but also mentally and emotionally. And it isn't only because we've burned a few calories, it's because we've activated one of the body's own communication systems. And the more I learn about muscle, the more I realize just how amazing it really is. And that, again, like I say, that motivates me all the time to continue incorporating muscle movement into my schedule. Even when I'm just sitting down working at my desk, and I always incorporate little movement breaks every hour at least anyway, and my watch does tell me to do that. It tells me to stand up if I haven't done so in an hour, and then I'll always choose to do the thing that would contract a muscle. So I'm more than happy to walk up and down the stairs, you know, to walk up the stairs, for example. If something needs to go upstairs, I usually volunteer it, or say, I'm going to do that now. Or if my partner said, oh, I need something from upstairs, oh, I'll go and get it. In that moment, I might not feel like going upstairs, but I always sort of remind myself, and I'm kind of used to it now. I've sort of conditioned myself now that I want to take, you know, whatever route I can to just build this into my day. I will stand up every so often and do a few body weight squats next to my desk and sit back down. Some things just, you know, really simple things on a day-to-day basis. And then of course, I'll also do strength training workouts a few times a week. I do 2 to 3 times a week at the moment. But that was just a side note. So let me sort of go back to what we're talking about, why muscle is so good. So in the previous couple of episodes, we spent quite a bit of time talking about metabolism and blood sugar. So I won't repeat the mechanisms of all of that today. You can go back and listen to episode 97 if you haven't already, and 96. But I do want to bring everything together in this episode. So remember that we talked about muscle acting like a sponge for glucose. So when your muscles are healthy and active, they're really good at soaking glucose out of your bloodstream and using it for energy. That's why we sort of call it a sponge for glucose. It's like if you picture that yellow sponge that you might use to wash the dishes, and that's sort of soaking up the glucose that's released into the bloodstream after eating a meal. And it's the carbohydrate element of that meal that releases glucose into the bloodstream. And muscles, when they're healthy, when they're active, and the more we have, the more they are going to be soaking up that glucose. And then we can use that for energy rather than storing it. And if we end up storing it, if there's too much of it remaining around to store, a lot of it gets stored as body fat, particularly around the middle. So belly fat, essentially. And that can be really hard to shift. You know, we start to think, oh, I should exercise more. It's not about that. That would really be about addressing blood sugar balance, which is why our muscles are so great at managing our body composition and our fat storage. So our muscles are responsible for the vast majority of glucose disposal after we've eaten. So, getting rid of that glucose from the bloodstream. And like I say, getting it into the cells to be used as energy rather than it being stored as body fat. So every time you build and preserve the muscle that you have, build new muscle, you're giving your body a bigger, healthier place to store and use that energy, that glucose. So your muscle is like your metabolic health ally. It's one of the reasons strength training improves insulin sensitivity and why it supports steadier energy throughout the day. Because if we are effectively getting that glucose into our cells, body and brain to be used as energy, we're going to have a steadier energy across the day. If we're struggling to get that glucose into our cells, we're going to feel these kind of energy dips throughout the day and maybe brain fog and cognitive issues. It's also one of the reasons that preserving muscle becomes increasingly important during perimenopause, when our insulin sensitivity naturally begins to decline. So again, hopefully you can see how all of these pieces are fitting together. So last week we talked about blood sugar, so I won't go into that, like I said, again. But this week we're talking about one of the body's biggest tools for helping to regulate it. So blood sugar and insulin sensitivity, blood sugar balance and insulin sensitivity are so foundational to health. And as we move through perimenopause, as estrogen declines, because estrogen is a really good, it's a very effective hormone at keeping our cells sensitive to insulin. So as estrogen starts to change and decline, we can become more prone, I guess is the word to use, to insulin resistance. So this is what I want to bring it in this week, is the importance, you know, of this being muscle being a biggest tool for us to help regulate blood sugar better and keep or get our cells to be more sensitive to insulin. And it's just another reminder that our bodies don't work in separate compartments. Everything is so beautifully and amazingly connected. So something that surprises a lot of people about muscle is that it doesn't only support your metabolism. I've just touched on it a little bit, but it supports your brain. So research has consistently shown over many years now that people with greater muscle strength and muscle mass tend to have better cognitive health as they age. We also know that strength training encourages the production of substances that support the growth, the maintenance, and the communication of our brain cells, For example, a substance called BDNF, brain-derived neurotrophic factor. Again, you don't need to remember that name, but this is nicknamed as fertilizer for the brain, like Miracle-Grow for the brain, which I think is an American brand, but you know what I mean. Now, I'm not suggesting that building muscle is some sort of magic cure for brain fog or cognitive decline, but, you know, because perimenopause and health is far more complex than that. There's never just one miracle cure or anything. We need to consider hormones, sleep, stress, nutrition, and a lot of other factors that play a role. But muscle is definitely one important piece of that puzzle. So, for example, the better our bodies are at soaking up glucose from the bloodstream, i.e. being insulin sensitive, the more energy is available for our brains. And like I said a minute ago, that can ease brain fog, if that was one of the mechanisms at play for your own brain fog, you know. So that, like I say, there's the various reasons for brain fog. But if one of the reasons or something that was feeding into it for you is that you're struggling, maybe there's insulin resistance going on and your body is struggling to get the glucose into your brain cells efficiently, then that can cause brain fog. So if we fix blood sugar imbalances and bring back insulin sensitivity in a person, it can impact their brain fog positively. And what's great and hopeful is that, unlike some of the changes happening during perimenopause, building muscle is an area where we can actively support ourselves. You know, not that there's nothing we can do about any of the other changes. Of course there is, but this is a really strong area where we can say, right, I will support myself then. I will start adding in some kind of strength training, resistance training, something that helps to contract my muscles to the point where they build. I will start to do that because I can actually see how beneficial this is going to be and how important it is for everything. Every strength session is doing so much more than exercising our muscles. It's investing in the future health of our brain. So for me, that is a key reason. Like I say, if I, you know, I like to go 2 to 3 times a week, and if I only go once and then I don't end up going a second or third time, or I feel like I don't want to, I always remind myself, this isn't just about, you know, managing my body weight or how I look. There is so much more here and I need to do this for myself. Or if I think that one day I was planning to go to the gym on that particular day, but actually work is too busy, I can't go, I have to stop and remind myself, no, you have to prioritize getting to the gym. You can't just not go because work is too busy and then look back in 20 years and say, damn, I wish I'd prioritized it. Work, I could have, you know, I can plan my work around it. So it's little things like that. Knowing this sort of information is really helpful for me personally, and I know the same for a lot of my clients, to motivate us to really, you know, get us to keep these things in as non-negotiables. So we've spoken about brain. Then there's our bones. So if you've ever heard someone talk about osteoporosis around menopause, which obviously we talk about a lot because losing estrogen can start to impact our bone health and increase our risk of osteoporosis and breaks as we get older, then you'll know, bone health is a very important area that we need to be considering, not just when we get older, but now as well. And one of the beautiful things about our body is that our muscles and our bones are constantly communicating with each other as well. So again, these things are active. They're not just sitting there. Every time a muscle contracts and pulls on a bone during resistance exercise, it sends a signal that says, we need this bone to stay strong. And you can also, you know, apply that to knee, for example, knee pain. I hear a lot of people say, my knee hurts, so I don't do these things. I won't squat because my knee hurts. I can't do lunges because my knee hurts. And really, these things will help to get your knee stronger. But obviously, we need to learn or make sure that we've learned how to do these things properly. We want the proper form, the safe form, of course. And we don't just want to overload when we're not quite ready for certain weights. But it is important that we don't just use those kind of symptoms of potential knee pain or any other pain to say, oh, work, you know, strength training isn't for me because I have these pains. We actually, that's more of a reason for you to make it work, because we're helping to, you know, if we're pulling on the muscles that are around, for example, I'm just using the knee as an example, then we're strengthening that knee joint. So we're sending a signal for this bone to stay strong. And our bones respond by continually repairing and strengthening themselves, which means that when we strengthen our muscles, we're also helping to strengthen the framework that supports our entire body. This is one of the reasons that resistance training is considered one of the most effective ways of supporting bone health as we age. You know, I hear people saying, what supplements should I take? Strength training is the gold, like the number one thing that you can be doing to support bone health. And like I said before, age doesn't matter. It's never, ever too late to start introducing it. And for women moving through perimenopause and after perimenopause, when declining estrogen starts affecting bone density, it's an really incredibly valuable investment in our future. You know, we're at a stage, perimenopause, we haven't necessarily lost our estrogen yet. We only stop making it when we reach menopause itself, after we've gone 12 months without having a period. But the whole way through perimenopause, estrogen's changing. It's erratic. We get drops, we get highs, we get drops, we get highs. And then eventually it does start to decline and so on until we reach menopause itself. And that's going, like, you know, that's a process going on over years, which, you know, if you've been listening to my episodes for a long time. And now is a time when bone density is being affected. We can't get around that. And it's a really important time that we start to invest in that in our future. So muscle is really about independence. You know, when we think about building muscle, it's easy to focus on today, on now. Will I feel stronger? Will I have more energy? Will I notice changes in my body? Yes, yes, yes to all those three things. But I'd also love us to think much further ahead and imagine ourselves, for example, at 75 or even 85. What kind of life would you like to be living? Would you like to be traveling still at 80, 85? I know I definitely would, at least going out and about a lot, walking along the beach, playing with grandchildren, carrying your own shopping, being able to get up from the floor without help, remain independent in your own home, not needing somebody to live there and care for you. These are all, or, you know, leaving your home and having to be somewhere else for people to care for you. These are all things that muscle is protecting in the background that we might not see now or feel now, but it's definitely protecting those things. And it's one thing to live longer. You know, we statistically, we are living longer these days. But what about adding life to those years, not just living longer? I don't necessarily just want to live to 90, 95 in a state where I'm not independent and people are having to look after me and I can't do anything for myself, essentially. That's not what I want. I want to be able to live to those ages with my own independence and with my health. Now, obviously, it's not going to be the same as it is 40 years before that, 30 years before that. We're obviously going to be in a different state of health at 90 compared to younger years. But if we can put things in place now to start investing in our strength, in our bones, in our muscle, we will be so thankful for it in those later years. And to me, that is much more of an inspiring reason to become stronger than just simply fitting into a smaller pair of jeans or staying in the, you know, the jean size I want to be. Of course, those things are great. But I'm also, like I say, my motivation for getting up and actually going to the two or three sessions that I'd planned that particular week is way more than just how I look, for sure. And that's why I genuinely believe muscle is one of the biggest gifts that we can give our future selves, you know, brain health, bone health, independence as we age, strength as we age, reducing our risk of osteoporosis. If we do have falls when we as we age, we're less likely to have a break from the fall if we have more muscle surrounding that bone, for example, versus somebody who has less muscle surrounding their bone and they fall in the same way, they're more likely to actually have a break. And we do know that as we age, breaks themselves can increase our risk of mortality as well. So these are just really motivational reasons and why I think that building muscle and making sure we add that into part of our life's routine, our lifestyle, is one of the biggest acts of self-care that we can give ourselves. Every time we choose to build strength in today's time, we're also investing in the woman that we're going to be 20 years from now, 30 years from now. So I think that's really, really important. So if muscle is doing all of these things behind the scenes, the next question would be, you know, you might think, okay, all right, Francesca, I believe you. You have convinced me. But how do I actually build muscle? Like, I'm not doing anything now. What do I do? So if that's what you're thinking, you're definitely not alone. There's so many women who are not doing any active, you know, muscle building at all. And I think this is where we need to cut through a lot of the noise that's out there, a lot of the confusion. Because if you spend any time on social media, you could still come away, you know, you could easily come away from it believing that unless you're lifting incredibly heavy barbells 5 times a week, you've got a big leather belt strapped around your waist and you're lifting the heaviest deadlift of your life, drinking protein shakes all day and spending hours in the gym, that you're not doing it right, or you may as well not even bother doing it. You know, if you're not doing this, what's the point? And yes, building muscle does require us to challenge our muscles, but there are so many different ways to do that. And we do see women lifting heavy online and things like that. And they're doing, you know, probably different versions of powerlifting. And that's great. That's something I was doing years ago and I really enjoyed it. And I actually wanted to do some competitions, but I just didn't get that far in the end. But it doesn't have to be that. It doesn't specifically have to be that way for you. So yeah, for some women, it might mean that you're going to join a gym. But for others, it might just be, I'm going to get myself a pair of adjustable dumbbells at home. Adjustable meaning you can sort of change, you know, the weights on them. I bought a pair recently because since we've just moved a couple of months ago, and now we're further away from any gyms and we don't yet have a car since we've left London and relocated. We will have one in a few months, but there'll be, you know, that'll make it a good sort of nearly 6 months living in this new house that's much further away from any gyms. I realistically am not going to manage to get there on public transport. It takes way too long and I'm just not going to be able to do it. I thought I might, you know, had this romantic idea that I could, but it's just not realistic. I'm not going to be able to fit that into my week. So I have to work with my current circumstances because I'm not just going to not lift weights for the whole time that I can't go to the gym. But maintaining strength or becoming stronger doesn't require these perfect conditions. It just requires consistency. So I bought myself a pair of adjustable dumbbells that go up to each dumbbell can go all the way up to 15 kilos each dumbbell, anywhere from, I think it's like 1.5 up to 15. And you can also make a barbell out of it, which goes up to 30 kilos. I've got myself a bench. I got myself some gym flooring because I'm using it in my garage. And all of this was really quite cheap and actually only cost the same amount as 3 months of a gym membership that I just cancelled, and I won't be using it for those 3 months, so I would have been paying it anyway had I been going. So that's how much it cost. And I've got various different sort of resistance bands. I've got old kettlebells that I had from lockdown, some heavy ones, some lighter ones, and some other bits and bobs that I already had. And I basically asked my current trainer. I don't actually work with a personal trainer physically, but he does programming for me because he knows me so well after years of working with him in the past. He does programming for me every kind of three or four months. So I just said to him, look, I'm going to be at home. This is what I've got. These are the weights I've got access to. I don't have access to any of these machines anymore, blah, 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 that we used to use. And I said, I just want to do 20, 25 minutes 3 times a week in the garage. And so he just gave me a program. And that's what I've been doing, because it's about consistency, not the perfect conditions. The perfect conditions for me personally would be that I can use a gym again and go back to my normal programming that I was finding really effective. But I can't do that right now. But I'm not just going to do nothing. I'm going to find ways to maintain consistency. So yeah, it could be working with resistance bands, bodyweight exercises, like I say, kettlebells, dumbbells, or it could be that you do end up, you know, you can go and find a personal trainer to help you for a while, to help you build confidence and learn the right forms and safe ways to move. There isn't one perfect way. There isn't one perfect program. There isn't one perfect body. There isn't one perfect weight that you know, as in kilograms of weight on the bar or the dumbbells that you should be doing for any particular exercise. It's literally just finding the approach that's realistic for you and something that you can be consistent with, not about being perfect at all. Consistency is always the thing that matters. So yeah, and just being realistic, like I could have forced myself to try and get to the gym on public transport 3 times a week, but I just know that I'm not going to do it. And what's going to happen is I'm going to get to Friday every week and feel like I failed, or I went once and it's just not good enough, or I didn't go at all. And it's just going to be really, really stressful. So I had to work with my current circumstances and what would be able, how I could make it consistent for me. You know, I'd much rather see people do 2 25-minute strength sessions every week for the next 5 years than 5 1-hour workouts that you only manage for 3 weeks before life gets in the way. And you keep trying to get back on the wagon, so to speak. You keep trying to start again next week, and it never actually happens. Whereas if you had just said, right, I'm going to do 2 25-minute strength sessions every week for the foreseeable future, the likelihood is you'll do that. So we have to have realistic goals for ourselves and not compare ourselves to what other people do. I know plenty of people, friends and just people I know, who are making it into the gym 4 to 5 times a week for over an hour at a time, and they're loving it and they're feeling, you know, that the energy's great and they're doing really well, and they just slot it into their week. And I could look at those people, because I see it on Instagram, and think, oh my God, I'm failing, I'm doing it wrong, I'm not good enough, I might as well not do anything, I need to do what they're doing, I need to do it how they're doing. I could do that, but it would just completely stump me. It would just stop me doing anything. So I don't compare. That's their story, that's their life, that's what they want, that's what they need. I'm just all about small things done consistently. Those things will change our physiology and give us results. And I know they do, because I've seen it. It's how I've always approached it. And one of the phrases you'll hear a lot in the fitness world is lift heavy. And of course, that's not wrong. I'm not saying it's wrong. But I actually think it can be quite intimidating, because what's heavy for one person might be completely different for somebody else. Your heavy is literally your heavy. So when someone says lift heavy to you, let's say you've not lifted before at all, and it's your first time, your trainer isn't going to just give you a barbell that's got like 60 kilos on it and tell you to lift it, because that's what heavy is. Heavy is your heavy. So for you on that day, having never lifted before, heavy could be 5 kilos, it could be 2 kilos, it could be 8 kilos. That would be heavy for you. If you've, if you've never lifted before, a 4 kilo dumbbell could feel incredibly challenging if you were to pick it up and maybe do a shoulder press with it or a chest press with it. And that challenging is exactly what we need. If you've been strength training for 10 years, you might be lifting considerably more than that. If you've squatted before with a barbell on your back, if you've never squatted before with a barbell on your back, you might only be able to squat without one, or with one that's really light, like 10 kilos. Whereas someone who's been squatting with a barbell on their back for years is more than likely, if they've been building up to consistently, able to go in and pick up 60 kilos and do 5 reps with it. But you're both lifting heavy that day. Just, you know, you could stand next to each other and someone could say, well, that person's lifting heavy and that one isn't, because that person's only got a no bar or a naked bar with no plates on it, and the person next to her's got 60 kilos, so she's lifting heavy and she's not. They're both lifting heavy for them. So that's really important to appreciate. Neither is better, as long as we're challenging the muscle in our unique body, that particular moment. That's what matters. That's what we need to build muscle. Those people are just simply at different stages of the same journey. And the goal is not to compare ourselves to anyone. It's to just gradually and then consistently ask your muscles to do a little bit more than they're currently used to doing. And that is how the muscles receive the message. We need to stay. We need to stick around. We need to grow and we need to get stronger. And our bodies, like I said, they're so good at adapting. Muscles really do respond quite well and quite quickly. And I find that so motivating when a person starts strength training, and, you know, within a couple of weeks, they're seeing progression and they're feeling progression. And it feels amazing. It feels really powerful. But what we also need to remember is that over time, let's say, you know, we started our strength training and we're doing certain weights, eventually the muscles no longer receive the signal to become stronger. So every now and then, say every few weeks, for example, we do need to gently increase the challenge. So we might choose a slightly heavier weight, a couple of kilos, and then that feels a little bit more challenging today than the weight that we were doing before. That's great. We've done it. And then again, your muscles will adapt to that slight increase, and so on and so on. And it could be that you increase the weight, but it might also be that you keep the weight as it was, but you add another repetition known as a rep. So another go, like, you know, maybe you were doing 8 reps at a certain weight, and now that weight feels easy, you could increase the weight and continue doing 8 reps, or you could do 10 reps or 12 reps at the same weight, and that will also increase the challenge. Or you could slow the movement down, so keep the same weight if you're not in a position to increase the weight. Maybe you're doing home weights and you don't have anything heavier for that particular movement. Then you can slow the weight, the movement down, so that you feel that contraction a bit more. You know, improve our technique if it's not, if we're not sure that it's the best technique. We could maybe just get some temporary help from a strength coach to make sure that we are lifting safely and properly. But progress doesn't always come from lifting dramatically heavier weights. It comes from challenging the muscle and moving better. Which brings us to another question that I get asked a lot, which is, which exercises should I be doing? And honestly, you don't need an endless list. Our bodies are designed to push, to pull, to squat, to hinge. So for example, a deadlift, to carry. So for example, something called farmer carries where we just have a dumbbell or a kettlebell in each hand and we're carrying, and they're designed to rotate. And if your strength routine includes movements that work your whole body over the course of a week, you're already doing really well. It doesn't have to be complicated. And in fact, I'd actually argue that keeping it simple makes it much more likely that you'll continue. It's that consistency. It's got to be real. If you like really, really think, how much time have I got each week to dedicate to a strength training session, if that includes getting to and from the gym, or you're going to do stuff at home, factor all of that in as well. And it might be, I've got 2 30-minute slots a week, then that's it. Because the best strength training program isn't the one that's, you know, everyone says is perfect or it's scientifically perfect. It's the one you're actually going to do. It's the one you're actually going to do consistently, week in, week out. And you're making it realistic to the point where you're far less likely to have anything knock you off course. Like if I was to say I'm going to commit to traveling on public transport to the gym after our move, I might do it. I might have done it for a week, but then I probably wouldn't have managed to go 2 or 3 times. It would have been maybe once a week every so often. And I'd feel rubbish. I'd feel like I'd failed. And then I just think I'll stuff this until I can get a car and go to the gym. But there's something I could have done in between, which is what I'm doing, that's kept things consistent. So there's another piece of this puzzle that we can't ignore, because challenging our muscles is only half of the story. We also have to nourish them. So the lifting session, the strength training session is really, really important. That's helping to contract the muscle and give them that signal to build, to grow, to stick around. But they also need, you know, imagine if you're building a house, you could have the most skilled builders in the world building the house. But if there's no bricks arriving at the building site for them to do the job, nothing's really going to get built. They're just going to be kind of working around things. So protein provides many of those building blocks, essentially. Protein breaks down into amino acids, lots of 20 different amino acids in our protein foods. And those are the kind of materials, the raw materials that our body uses to repair and build muscle tissue after we've challenged it. Now, one of the biggest changes I encourage women to make during perimenopause is not necessarily eating more food, unless you're under eating and you do need to eat more food, then please do. But it's really about eating enough protein and spreading it out across the day. And I've talked about this in previous episodes many, many times, but it can never be said enough. A lot of women have very little protein at breakfast still. They also have a very light lunch with very minimal protein. And then they end up having quite a good protein-rich dinner, which is great. But our muscles benefit from having regular opportunities throughout the day, starting from the first meal of the day, to stimulate what's called muscle protein synthesis, or MPS, which simply means building and repairing muscle, muscle protein synthesis. So the building and making and repairing of your muscle. Rather than trying to eat the majority of your protein in one meal, which is what a lot of women are doing, I see food diaries, it's what I ask one-to-one clients to complete before we meet. And again, like I say, I see a lot of them having good protein-rich dinners. But I really do encourage women to think about including a good source of protein with breakfast, making sure there's at least 30 grams of protein in their breakfast, seeing how much they're getting now without trying, and then seeing where they fall short and trying to add more bits in there. And the same with lunch and the same with dinner. And for a lot of women, somewhere, like I said, somewhere around 30 grams minimum, it could be even 40 grams. Of good quality protein at each meal is a really helpful place to aim Although, of course, this can vary depending on the size of your body, your activity levels, your own individual needs. But if we're all shooting for at least 30 per meal, that's going to be good, because we're not looking for perfection. Where, you know, there'll be people that could hear this and say that, you know, maybe these real sort of protein kind of hardcore nutritionists who really want things to be perfect for everybody. And that would be great in an ideal world, but we're not in an ideal or perfect world. It's really about creating more opportunities for our body to preserve and build muscle. And if you're not currently getting around 30 grams of protein 3 times a day, I would say this is definitely something to work towards. And something that usually surprises people is that we don't actually build muscle while we're exercising. We build it afterwards. And that's also where protein comes in, the amino acids from protein foods. Strength training provides the stimulus, and then recovery is where the adaptation, so the actual building and repair of the muscle, actually happens. And that's why, like I say, eating protein matters, eating enough food matters, sleep matters, managing stress, supporting your nervous system, because all of these things essentially feed into that process of building and that adaptation process where we're building and repairing muscle. Our body needs time and resources to respond to the signal we've given it, which is the stimulus that we've provided through strength training. And if you've listened to previous episodes in this series, which hopefully you have, if you haven't, do go back, you'll probably notice that we're coming back to these same foundations all the time: sleep, protein, other nourishment, blood sugar, stress, movement. They all support each other. And the biggest takeaway from this series of episodes about the whole body shift is really that health is built through lots of small habits that work together to support the whole body. It's not just thinking about one thing in isolation. They all work together. And I'd also like to say this before we finish this episode today: please don't wait until you feel fitter, until you feel more confident or know exactly what you're doing, because you probably won't ever feel that confident, that fit, you know, and you may never start. Every woman who now looks comfortable in the gym was once a beginner. Anyone you see on Instagram or in the gym who looks just so confident, they were always a beginner. Every woman who lifts weights confidently today, they once picked up their first dumbbell, didn't feel confident walking into a gym, didn't know what they were doing, they weren't very fit, they weren't very strong, and so on. None of us start as experts or feeling perfectly confident in our gym kit, for example. I've heard people say, and years ago I've experienced this myself, I'm not going to start going to the gym until I feel confident in a gym kit. But we need to just start, and we'll get that, you know, we'll get that confidence that we want later. That's all that our body asks of us, particularly as we move through perimenopause, is please just start, and then don't try and be perfect. Don't compare yourself to others. Just become consistent and start in your journey to start making yourself become a little stronger than you were yesterday and last week and so on. So we're not building muscle to impress anyone else. We're not going into a gym to impress anyone else. We're doing it all for ourselves. We want to build a body that's going to carry us through the next 30, 40, and hopefully 50 years of our lives, so that we can remain healthy and independent for as long as possible, so we can keep doing the things that we love as we age. I saw a man out on his bike the other day. I overheard him the day before, someone saying happy birthday, and he said he was 82. And I see him every morning going out. He goes for a little jog, and then he jumps into the sea, because I live by the sea and he has a swim, and he jumps on his bike and cycles home, and he does this every day, and he's 82. And I just thought, that's what I want. I want to be able to do those things at that age and not be sitting in a chair for somebody to come and sort of help me get out of bed. I want to have a body that feels capable, resilient, and strong. And so if we take the focus off doing this because we're chasing a particular clothes size, or, you know, to look a certain way, and instead to do it because we're investing in our future health, then that can sort of start to make it feel a lot more worthwhile and important. And like I said, that is my motivation anyway. That's what gets me to go and actually do it. And I think we can spend so much of our lives trying to make our bodies smaller or change them in some way, when ideally we should be thinking about making them stronger and healthier. And those are two very different goals. One usually comes from a place of criticism or low self-worth and, lack of confidence. And the other goal comes from a place of self-care. Like I said, lifting weights, building muscle is one of the biggest, greatest forms of self-care that we can offer ourselves now. And I'd rather encourage that we come at it from a place of self-care and self-worth than just simply how we look. Because your body is so amazing and it's already working really hard for you. You know, every second of every day, it's repairing cells, it's producing hormones, it's trying to regulate your system, it's supporting your immune system, regulating your blood sugar, keeping your heart beating, helping your brain function, trying to get you to have restorative sleeps. It's doing so many, you know, thousands of extraordinary things all day, every day, without us ever having to think about them, all happening in the background. And in perimenopause, that kind of ramps up a little bit. And we need to do whatever we can to sort of give something back to our body. And building muscle is really one of the biggest ways that we can do that. It tends to work a lot easier when we have more muscle. And I just think that's such a different relationship to have with our bodies, and your body and your brain, you know, everything will thank you, not just now, but in the future as well. And one last thing to mention before I go, when you start strength training, try not to measure your progress by the scales. I would definitely encourage anyone not to use just regular scales that don't tell you anything other than your weight. Instead, start to notice the other things that begin to change. You might be carrying the shopping feels easier, going up a ramp that you normally walk up feels easier, going upstairs feels easier. Maybe your back aches a little less, your neck aches a little less, maybe your legs feel less fatigued when you're working them. Maybe you're starting to notice that you feel less achy when you get up in the morning, you're maybe sleeping more deeply. That's a big one. When people start strength training, they tell me, and I had this as well, that their sleep gets deeper. You might start to notice your energy is steadier, you're feeling more confident. Like climbing the stairs, climbing inclines just isn't leaving you quite so breathless. And maybe your posture changes and you notice that you're standing stronger. You might just simply feel more capable, more strong. Those are the changes that really matter, and they last. You know, as long as we keep doing this, they last. And they matter so much more than what the scales happen to say, you know, on a Monday morning, because they're telling you something much more meaningful. They're telling you your body is adapting, it's becoming stronger, and it's more resilient. So rather than leaving you with a long to-do list, I just want to encourage you to ask yourself, what is one small thing I could do this week to become a little bit stronger? Maybe it's booking your first strength class at a gym or somewhere that you know, or an intro session with a strength training coach. Maybe it's dusting off the dumbbells that you've got at home or the kettlebells that you've got at home. Maybe you've had them since lockdown and they've just been used. They've just been collecting dust ever since. Maybe you'll start to add a source of protein to your breakfast and make sure you're getting at least 30 grams with your breakfast. Maybe it's going for a walk, carrying a slightly heavier backpack sometimes. It might simply just be believing that for the first time, strength training is something that's available to you if you're not already doing it and you're not thinking, oh, you know, no longer thinking there's no point in doing it if I can't get to the gym five times a week, or if I can't lift and I'm not in perfect shape, or my back's not perfect and strong, you know, that actually it's available to you. So I think I've banged on enough. That's it for this week. I hope you found this episode helpful. I'd be really grateful if you shared it with a friend or even left a review if it's resonated with you, or if you know someone who might benefit from it. The ratings and the reviews really do help more women discover the podcast and learn that it's actually there. So thank you so much for listening, and I will see you next week. Bye-bye.
If you enjoyed this episode and you're wanting a bit more support, there's a few ways I can help you. You can take my free perimenopause quiz, join my Midlife Thrive membership, or work with me one-to-one. And I'll leave all the details in the show notes. And if this episode resonated, I'd love you to share it with someone who might need to hear it too. Thank you so much for being here. It really means a lot. And I'll see you in the next episode.